Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of Open Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph. So on today's episode, we get a little bit controversial. A recent article by Chimamanda was posted online in which she discussed a personal story about a well-known associate of hers who she felt kind of went over the line in attacking her on social media. But, you know, there was a lot of more, you know, themes in that article, which range from how nowadays people behave on social media as far as posturing online to being different, you know, behind the scenes. So on today's episode, I spoke with my friend Kiki about that article, and we discussed a flurry of topics from woke culture to cancel culture, to social media toxicity, can't say that word. But yeah, we did discuss the whole range of, you know, the whole spectrum of social media, what it means these days, how people act, how people behave, mob mentality, everything in between. It was a very lengthy discussion. We broke down a lot of things on it. I think most of you find this interesting, especially from the perspective of what social media is becoming today. So yeah, hope you enjoyed this episode, and here we go. Okay, great. So, ready to tackle this topic? I actually want to get your full thoughts on everything. Because I want to hear a different perspective than mine.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, so... let me just give the context and the breakdown. Okay, so today I just want to just talk about what happened with social media. Well, it was kind of yesterday, but kind of got more flushed out today. So Chimamanda went online and wrote this long piece about, I mean, it's kind of long, but just to give the gist is that somebody reached out to her about, you know, a writing workshop. She helped the person out. Chimamanda later went to made some comments in an interview, which were controversial. This person who had reached out to Chimamanda went online and basically, I guess, cursed her out because of those comments. And then they tried to reconcile with Chimamanda and she wasn't having it. And then this person went on back online and was basically still bashing her and everything else. So Chimamanda put out this long post about how everything transpired and basically saying that this whole social media thing is basically toxic in a way. So that was what transpired, and what happened after that was it created this kind of spectrum of opinions and thoughts and everything else on social media. So with my take on it, my take was basically this. I think Chimamanda was just saying that, hey, the way social media is going, it's become this kind of a mob mentality and people having entitlement and everything else and being toxic and not necessarily having kind of the wherewithal or basically having, I guess, the sanctity to just be civil even with disagreements. And I think that's what happened and it had everybody up in a roar. So I wanted to get your take on it. Like, what did you think about the piece and what do you think about the aftermath?
I think that the piece itself, the aftermath, what came before is perfect. I think everything exactly as it has transpired is perfect. And I think that really this is a real moment and an opportunity for reflection. And I think that some real intra-community reflection needs to happen. And I'm saying that it's perfect because I have struggled with these things a lot myself. And as someone who, you know, you called me a baby of the internet, and I really do consider myself a baby of the internet. Funny enough, this week I accidentally put my birthday into Twitter, and Twitter locked me out of my account for 48 hours because they determined that I wasn't 13 at the time that my account was created.
Wow.
So that should tell you how long I've been on the internet. And so I really grew up in that sort of Tumblr, Twitter era of, like, you know, really the birth of SJWs. And I think that thankfully I was introduced to sort of that whole space as a teenager. This is just some background and context for why I feel the way I feel, so bear with me.
Sure.
So I was introduced to that space as a teenager. And so I think that for me, it gave me the opportunity to interrogate it as I developed into an adult, to the point where by the time I reached, you know, college age, and I had a clearer sense of who I wanted to be, I realized that there were lots of things about that space that were toxic and that, like, I did not really appreciate. And I say that, and it's a good thing that this happened in my teen years as opposed to my adult years, because I find that when you're an adult, you are very formed in your perspective and your viewpoint of the world, and whoever you think you are, you really cling to that and stick to that, right? So I could sort of, as a teenager coming into college, see the whole SJW Tumblr thing as a phase and move to a more, I guess, like, temperate way, and a very objective and I think a bit more empathetic way of viewing the world, because I was not fully formed as when it was introduced to me, and so I was willing to explore other things. And so I think that a lot of things here resonates with me. A lot of the issues Chimamanda has had resonates with me. And I say this as someone who stepped back from the community because I also experienced a similar form of harm that she did. And so I have a very intimate relationship with sort of seeing people postulate all of these, like, theories and ideologies and, like, these very almost dogmatic, almost like absolutist ways of, you know, synthesizing the world. That's the binary of good and evil and oppressor and oppressed, right? And seeing them sort of be champions for the good guy and for the champions for the oppressed, champions for the afflicted, and in a sense viewing themselves in an almost Christ-like and savior type of manner. No, like, I'm just being real, right? Because you're a fighter for the oppressed. Perfect. Very good. We need to speak up for those who are oppressed. No doubt about it. But there's a way that in doing that, people will start to believe that they are almost infallible, or at least have a very navel-gazing way of even reflecting on their own capacity for harm and their own actions. And because the internet is, like, is an avenue for people to come together under, like, banners of identity and solidarity, if a group of people is able to convince themselves that, you know, they are saviors and they are martyrs and everything that they say, you know, advances their cause, and so, you know, this is the right way and this is the right path, when you manage to convince yourself of that as a group, it's very difficult to think that you can do something wrong, and it's very difficult to challenge yourselves in what you believe. So all of this to say that I feel that, you know, there's people always say that, like, you can be a member of an oppressed group and also be capable of harm, and I think that it's something that we see and people roll their eyes and think, you know, obviously everyone is capable of harm, but there's real ways that they're not seeing the way that their actions are also perpetuating harm. And I'll give you a typical example.
Okay.
Today there was someone who decided to call out Chimamanda, and in doing so she called her a rat. And this is a person who previously had told people not to use the word stupid because it's ableist. And it was like, wow, how can you say that but then call somebody a rat? There's something about that feels wrong, right? Even me saying this to you, it feels wrong to you. And I was thinking everyone would know that this is OD, this is extra. Then I see someone quote the tweet and say, but how can you compare stupid to rats?
What?
Because stupid is ableist. Even if you think that rats is not a nice thing to call someone, how can you compare the two? And I'm thinking, well, what? But this is the real way that someone can, really weaponize identity, really weaponize oppression, right? And say that because this thing is ableist or racist or homophobic, somehow it has to be held to a higher degree of, like, you know, harm and alarm than something that is just plain mean and plain wicked. Do you understand? Because you don't want people to be called these things because it inflicts harm on them. It harms their mental, their emotional, sometimes even their physical well-being. So why then do you think you could call somebody a rat? The principles should be there. And so, like, I was talking today and reflecting on this thing I had studied in school about how Schmitz, he's very problematic, but he talked about the concept of the political and and how the political necessitates that you see things through this this binary and dichotomy of friend versus enemy, right?
Yeah.
And so when everything is against that nexus of friend and enemy, you stop seeing human beings, you stop seeing feelings, you stop even seeing yourself as a human being. At that point, you're a soldier. And a soldier is following orders, a soldier is following a mandate.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, no matter what has to happen. So for me, it's like, I don't see how you can do the things that you did to Chimamanda as a human being on a human being to human being level and expect that she not say anything and hide under the guise of like transphobia, transphobia, transphobia. Do you know what I mean? And there's a whole lot of unpacking to be done there. I have special thoughts on the whole transphobia conversation itself. Like, I don't think I should reveal my identity because I think I'll be canceled. But I have special thoughts about transphobia and the phobias in general. And as someone who, like, disclaimer, I went to an Ivy League. I breathed and lived wokeness, whichever wokeness, like, you know, people think that they experience on the internet. I have lived it live and I have seen sort of like the offline translation of these online conversations and attitudes from dragging culture to cancel culture to like this woke savior culture. I've seen it play out in very, very toxic relationships. Anyway, I've been rambling. I don't see how you can do something like that to Chimamanda and sort of hide behind the guise of identity. And I think that is really what she was driving at, is that there's a very human side to all of this that people are missing out on. And the more you sort of like immerse yourself into this rabbit hole of activism and seeing everything through the lens of like whichever like oppressive mechanisms that you're fighting against, like the longer you do that, the more you lose sight of even what the underlying principle of all of this is. It's about empathy, it's about love for nature, love for neighbor, it's about caring for one another. So how can you possibly say don't use the word stupid because it's ableist and then call somebody a rat? And how can that be okay, right? And in thinking that, well, you're defending trans people, you're defending oppressed people, what does that say about you? And so this is exactly my point, is that like a lot of people dismiss when people talk about even how you talk to those that you're meant to educate. They call it tone policing and they say that, you know, like, do your own research, we don't need to talk to you nicely, this is that. Okay, I hear it, but like those types of things have made people think that they're not accountable to everyone else,
right,
on like a human level, and that they don't owe anyone who's no sort of like taking up arms with them any sort of like kindness or any sort of relation, even on an individual basis. And I think that that's really where the problems are stemming from. And I think that like even this idea of not giving people grace, not like accepting anyone that's not 100% in line with you, and equating everything that is like a little bit radical, a little bit polemic, a little bit, you know, uncomfortable to think about or talk about, like labeling that as violence or like hatred or like inciting harm, like all of these very you know, all of these very hyperbolic ways and like of like viewing and the world, it makes everyone extremely sensitive. And in such a polarized environment, this sensitivity just explodes into things like this. And so that's why I say that, like, at the end of the day, I think it's very sad that Chimamanda's article has been weaponized by people on the people like Piers Morgan. Like, that is very uncomfortable for me. But what I think is that Chimamanda always talks to her people. She always talks to her community. She always talks to people who are already on some sort of level of understanding with her. I believe that thinking is in layers. So a lot of these topics, you can only really relate on a certain type of level if we've spoken on other types of levels. So we can only even have this trans discussion if we even understand and accept that sexuality is a spectrum, that gender is fluid, and like all of these different things, right? So even the fact that she's here having that type of conversation and saying, well, trans women are trans women and their experiences are not necessarily the same as cis women, she's having that conversation as someone who already understands you and who already hears you as a member of your community. So to brand her an enemy because of that type of conversation, and to equate it to her being a murderer, equate it to like her literally being like, if you look up what transphobia means, like the dictionary definition, and even what you would think of as a transphobe with people like actually killing trans teenagers and things in the street, to equate someone like that to that, I think is very problematic. And when you do that, you put a target on your head back, and you, it's almost as though someone, one of the people that she wrote about, actually was lamenting how she's very saddened that Chimamanda's apparent transphobia is not enough for people to deplatform her. And I'm thinking, why is deplatforming her the end goal here? Right? Why is that what
why is that the end goal?
What exactly is the end goal? Not protecting people? Is the end goal not healing as a community? Is the end goal not protecting each other? So for me, it's like, why are we losing sight of protecting each other? As almost as if it's like, you know how Ghanaians go to church and then they just go there and pray against Satan and pray against their enemies and do all of that and hunt down their enemies rather than praying for their own like growth? Like, why are you spending all this time fighting and like, you know, even fighting each other when there's real work to be done? Not to say that you can't do both, but at some point you need to be very stingy with your energy expenditure. Like, and I think that as a community too, people forget that a lot of the ideologies that we have now are the product of like rich intellectual debates and a history of debate and of academic conversations. Giovanni and Baldwin have talked about this, about like the power and disagreement. Like, people disagree and have conversations. So you're not arguing with somebody or with people who do not even believe that you need to exist, about people who are like debating your very existence. You're not arguing with someone on that level. This is a nuance, and it's a different level of conversation. It's at a different layer. And so as a community, if you bicker at that point and you don't even allow room for like, not even dissent, but for uncomfortable conversations that really question the philosophical nature of what we're dealing with, how do you grow? So all of this, again, to just say that I think that we need to really examine the way we treat people on an intra-communal level. We need to really examine like these very reactionary witch hunts ways of like behaving and organizing against people. We need to really reconsider like the weaponization of emotions and of like, you know, like language about social justice and of protecting people and like co-opting that to sort of benefit and use our personal agendas or our own insecurities. Like, I think a lot of like healing needs to happen. I don't know if it needs to be like a red table talk type of situation, but like, I think for me, I'm a bit disappointed that is rather yielding fighting and not sort of like real conversations that need to be had.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think that we're kind of, I think the social media part is, people are just too far gone. I don't think we're ever going to get back to the place of actually having civil discussions. You know, when I read Chimamanda's piece, one thing that stood out to me was what she said was about the whole like mob mentality of social media, where people, you know, take up pitchforks and, you know, go charge somebody on the internet for something that they've said or something along those lines. And I remember this kind of, there's this kind of magician, his name is Darren Brown. I remember he did this kind of special on TV, and it had to do with mob mentality in a way. Like the context that they was kind of doing this fake reality show where the audience all were wearing masks, and they were given instructions on what somebody had to go through their day. So they were saying that, oh yeah, let a thief steal his wallet, let somebody steal his car, blah, blah, blah. So, and at the end of the program, basically the guy who they were all controlling was broke. He was locked out of his house, and you know, people were stealing his stuff. And at the end of it, they showed him getting knocked down by a car. And then that's how the program ended, but it was all fake. Darren Brown faked the whole thing. But it kind of showed how when people as one wear one mask, they can kind of become this kind of mean, vindictive type group that don't have empathy for who they're affecting. And it's kind of what's happening with social media in a way, because people can go behind a keyboard and they can say almost anything, especially if it has to do with something that they disagree with. So now we're at this point where we have a lot of different groups online. People are in different camps and they're protecting those camps. So even going back to the transphobia group, I mean the transphobic argument, I remember I watched that interview, and in a way I knew what she was saying, even though maybe she didn't articulate it how people wanted to say, but it wasn't with, you know, harm, or she wasn't being vindictive. She was just pointing out something that, you know, that's what her opinion. And now to see that, you know, interview come up again because of this piece, and people are still saying
it's
kind of weird that, you know, what she said wasn't like the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, it wasn't necessarily like, oh yeah, I don't like transgender people.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't like, I could see why she would say it. Like, I could see her train of thought. It just wasn't,
Exactly. And the funny thing is, she actually went and clarified that this is not what I was trying to say. I was saying it like this. And the clarity kind of made sense. But the problem was, people were still upset regardless. And it's like, okay. Yeah, because now it's getting to the point of, okay, you're upset. And the thing is, do you want to hear an apology? Or do you want to be upset because somebody has said something you disagree with to the point where you want them taking off or deplatformed or whatever way you want it? And it's kind of weird in today's age. And now with social media, she said something that I totally agree with, where it's like, you can't tweet without kind of watching your words, because if you're not careful, you will kind of offend a group and you may go viral, and before you know it, you're getting attacked. And it's so accurate, because sometimes I find myself watching what I say as far as opinions, because even though, okay, I have an opinion about something, but I don't want to offend the group. I don't want to cause any type of debate where it might lead the wrong path. I just choose not to say anything at all. So I'm kind of, you know, watching my words, looking at my draft of something I'm saying, and just saying, no, I'm not going to say this because it might cause a problem. And I think most people are doing this these days. And it's happening. Yeah, because now it's even going into like movies, is going to TV shows. People are watching what they're saying because there's this fear of offending a specific group, if that group is offended, you may lead to being canceled or deplatformed or something like that. And it's a very scary phrase because, as you said, if everybody is sensitive now, like, what can you actually say in public that might be a bit controversial? But at least you can have a civil disagreement without necessarily calling somebody names, calling them a rat or stupid or whatever. So it's tough. I don't know, like, going forward, it's going to become worse, I think, because now we can't have these kind of topics or, you know, taboo topics to talk about in public or on social media because it's going to be offensive to somebody and they want to offend anybody.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I really experienced this yesterday when the conversation was raging on. I was like, wow, there's a lot that I would like to say, but I just don't want to deal with, I just don't want to deal with that, you know? And I think that is very frustrating because if you think about it on a very individualistic level, I'm in my house holding my phone with my internet, and I should be able to say what I want to say on my own account, especially if it's not like deliberately malicious, especially if it's not like, you know, and I guess part of this is just everybody having different scales of what they consider to be good and bad. But I personally think that a lot of what it is also just people's sort of almost entitlements to not feeling uncomfortable at something, people's entitlements to feeling like they need to be comfortable all the time,
or happy
all the time, or appeased all exactly, or appeased all the time by everything that happens, right? And if it's not an entitlement, then it's almost this like idealistic expectation that that should always be the case.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, even on a personal level in my personal life, something that I've learned this year has been that you're going to be very, very uncomfortable. I think you and I spoke about this some time ago, and you were like, you really like to be comfortable, don't you? And I said, yes, I do. I realized that I'm going to be very uncomfortable. People are really going to disappoint me. People are really going to hurt my feelings. And I had an issue with a friend that it was like, I guess the me of 2 years ago would have said, I'm never going to speak to you again. You are dead to me.
Right.
But this person reached out like once, they reached out twice. They reached out the third time and they were very, very like apologetic, very honest, very, you know, they understood the deeper issues with themselves that they were battling with that made them treat me the way that they treated me. And I was like, oh, I really appreciate that you were able to say this to me, and I know that it must have been difficult, and I forgive you, and I don't think that this issue is worth our friendship, is what I said to them. And so, like, you need to be able to do things like this, especially within a community. You need to be able to open up room for things like this within a community. And so what that looks like is that if Chimamanda even makes a comment like that and you strongly disagree with it, you can write an open letter to her, sign, like have like intellectual debates, go back and forth.
Yep.
They used to do it all the time,
have
intellectual, it was so fun. You know, they'll be writing in journals, writing in magazines, you know, like you can do that. You can really critique the substance of what she's saying and explain it, and then have her also come back, have like a tete-a-tete, go back and forth, even if it's academic beef, let it be that.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like this resistance to that, and just to say that you are morally wrong and you have sinned, you have committed a crime, and that is to assume yourself as judge, jury, and executioner. And how can human beings, individuals like you and me, who are also fallible, who also kind of see their own blind spots, how can they declare themselves the judge, jury, and executioner of other human beings? just like them. You can't do that. And so that's how you have all of the bickering and things like that. So I personally think that if that had happened, this conversation wouldn't even be happening. Because yes, like, especially how nice would it have been that you came to my workshop, I was kind of, let's even say protege, even though that seems to be a slur now, but you know, let's say protege, right? How nice would it be that you come and you challenge me as my protege in academic language? Then that one, I do look like a dickhead if I'm saying, you know, take my name off of her cover. But here you are, you've called me a murderer, you've said that like I'm friends with war criminals, you've said all sorts of things and smeared my name in the public, and my name is on your book cover. How am I sabotaging you if I'm asking for that to be pulled?
Yeah, and it's funny, even she said something about it's nowadays Twitter is performance art, where people want to have this kind of brand or look a certain way, so they will tweet certain tweets out in the front, but in the back they're totally different. And I'm seeing that way more and more, and it's like, wow, people are just like kind of just doing a lot of virtual signaling. It's like what are you doing? I know you as a person, but you're just fronting online for other people just to agree with you. And it's so odd, because now it's almost like you can't even have a disagreement online without you looking like the bad guy. Like if there's a popular opinion that you disagree on, you can't say it in public because you will get the full force of, you know, people coming at you from different angles. And it's kind of sad, because we can have disagreements, it's fine, but we don't have to you know, go, you know, wrestle in the mud and start calling each other names. It's just, I don't know, it's really disappointing in a way, because you expect human beings to, you know, have some sort of civility, like, hey, yeah, I disagree with your point, but, you know, we can still be friends and still hang out and do whatever. But now it's like, wow, you guys is gonna fight and just disgrace yourself in public.
I think part of that is also that when you get used to seeing everything through this sort of binary of friend versus enemy, and you have spent a lot of time fighting homophobes and transphobes and people who fundamentally believe that, you know, man and man cannot be together, man and woman and woman cannot be together. And so you have people debating your existence. You kind of start to think in absolute terms, like, no, like, this is absolutely wrong, you are questioning my existence, which is like a defense mechanism, a survival mechanism, and it's great. But then to translate that into anything that is absolutely, anything that is just marginally off the rails from what the absolute dogma is,
yeah,
to now equate that to those sorts of external enemies, and to make anyone that slightly deviates, you know, it's either you're with us 100% or you're against us 100%.
Yeah.
To be so extreme in thinking is very problematic. And I think that's where part of this is coming from. Like I said, like, Chimamanda is speaking to people within her community, and she is telling them that there's a deep problem here, there's a core rot here. Mm-hmm. And people are sort of ducking from that and still doing the same thing she's accusing them of to dodge accountability. And I find that absolutely ridiculous. And like you said, like, this thing of I can't even disagree with you, I think even disagreements is different, because what am I even disagreeing with you about? I, for example, I don't argue with homophobes at all. I've found that it's a complete waste of my time. I'm never going to change your mind. That is a-okay. I do not argue with homophobes. I do not have conversations like that with at all, where I'm now trying to prove to you that, you know, you should call somebody by their pronouns. I'm not going to do that. But I will have a conversation with someone within my community who's concerned about, you know, certain things, like
someone who's concerned about, for example, this blanket, this issue of conflating trans women to cis women and the experiences of trans women to the experiences of cis women. I think it's one thing to say that trans women are women. It's one thing to say trans women are trans women. And it's one thing to say that trans women are trans women and cis women are cis women, and we all fall under the umbrella of women. Those are three very different things and three very different ways of articulating points that are adjacent but are not ultimately in conflict with each other, which is why when Chimamanda was speaking, she said, and I say this, you know, with the absolute assertion that trans people should be allowed to be, she said that. And so when she has said that, she has reaffirmed support for the community. So how do we then still say, absolutely not, you are an absolute enemy, you are a terror? How do we arrive at that conclusion? Is this consistent commitment, this like almost blind faith, dogmatic commitment to ideology and sort of refusing to see the human beings that we are seeing that we're trying to protect? And I think it's very disappointing.
It almost becomes kind of this like political thing where you have, you know, the two-party system where if you're a Democrat in the US, basically you believe in a certain set of values, or if you're a Republican, you believe in a certain values, to the point where they won't even kind of communicate with each other because they firmly believe that they can't have a middle ground. And which is kind of absurd in a way, because you can. Because you can have some certain views. If you're a liberal person, there's nothing wrong with having some conservative views on certain issues, maybe based on your environment or raised up, or how you were raised. And same goes with the person who's conservative. They may have some liberal views on some things, but there's always going to be a middle ground. So now, if you are just going to see everything in black and white, you are never going to evolve, because then you're stuck in this kind of, well, I'm on my space, I believe this, therefore forget it, I'm never talking to the other side. Because it's funny, like I wouldn't say I'm like a Joe Rogan fan, but I do like his podcast. I do like the fact that he has different personalities with a lot of different viewpoints that he has, those people he has conversations with, and they always differ or have disagreements, but at the end of the day, there's always middle ground. It's kind of the same thing with Trevor Noah. He has always has like different type of guests on his show where he disagrees with them, but they still have this kind of discussion where it's civil and they still have the middle ground. Now, social media, there is no middle ground. It's like, I believe in this, this is my brand, I'm never going to change it. I'm never going to cross over, have this discussion with anybody. And so in a way, it's, I don't know, like, I just feel like now social media is just making, just dehumanizing everybody. And I don't think that we're ever going to, and the problem too that now is affecting people offline as well, where now you kind of, if you meet somebody you disagree offline or online, you're never going to talk to the person offline either, which is just kind of sad, because you can actually find middle ground offline, in person, having a conversation. Because I can't remember what it was, but it was a psychological study where they said that if you actually disagree with somebody online and you go offline, you can actually have a very civil discussion and find middle ground, because now you can see facial expressions, you can read tone or hear tone better, and you can actually have a way better discussion offline. But now, because of social media, everybody's typing in text. So how do I read certain text, and how do I read a tone in a text? So it's not helping. It's never helping. And I don't know, I just think it's going to get worse before it gets better, unfortunately.
Wow, I don't see how it could get worse than this.
Oh, you'd be surprised. I mean, because now people are just like forming groups. Like, it's becoming very militaristic. It's like, I'm in my squad, and there on the other side, there's your squad. we're going to have this fight online, you know, throwing words, retweets, threads, or whatever. And it's never, there's never going to have a civil discussion. I don't know how. It's just never going to work. I think I just said, you know, I made a funny tweet. I said that, you know what? I think we should just have, like, if these discussions come online, we should just have an Oxford style debate where we just have pro and against, and the audience gets to vote on whose point makes more sense.
That would be so funny.
It would be interesting, but I don't know. It's funny because, I mean, I'm a fan of debates. I mean, I like to listen to debates where there's a maybe controversial topic and hear people make intelligent arguments and, you know, bring points to the table. Because if you make better arguments or points where, okay, actually that makes sense, or that makes sense, then people can also see, oh, maybe I was wrong about this, or maybe I was wrong about that, and you can have a middle ground. But then to just kind of have the black and white view of, this is what I believe in, this is what I see, I'm never going to change this point, it's not going to get better. I don't see how it will.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I have at least seen part of, like, you know, sort of the craziness and the sort of running around with fire on our heads. I have seen a lot of people who are also in this sort of middle ground of observation. And I think that, like, I have this funny thing where I say that everything in life is just the curve of normal distribution. So you have people on either side of the polarizing ends, but you do have the bulk of people somewhere in the middle. And so that's sort of where my optimism comes from, is that knowing that, first of all, not everyone is that radical. Not everyone is like that radical right or radical left.
Yeah, some may be, majority may be posturing online, so they're not that radical. That's actually true.
Exactly, that too. But majority of people actually online or offline, you know, you also need to think about who are the loudest voices when these things are happening. And it may be that lots of people just have very loud voices, you know, and that is what is amplifying their message. But the majority of people actually are not those with the loudest voices. And so for me, that's sort of where my optimism comes from, is that there's this sense of decency. And even that is why things that were okay in, let's say, 2012 Twitter, you know, people are like, wow, that was crazy. It was crazy that you said that. And, you know, when these things happen, I'm always like, hi, you know, even back then I wasn't saying stuff like that because I've been woke. You know, there's a sense of, like, we're teaching ourselves how to be kinder, and we're getting better and better at it as we evolve. And that's why even cancel culture initially evolved, was because people were like, no, that's wrong. No, that's wrong. Initially, I was actually quite okay with cancel culture, because for me, I was like, okay, well, we're holding people to higher standards of behavior. And for me, who had grown up and seen people sort of be bullied, I was actually on Ghana Twitter at a time where this girl posted a picture of herself, like, she changed her avatar, and everyone was bullying her because she had acne, like, she had pimples on her face. Would you believe that? Incredible. And today you'd be like, what in the world? But I'm telling you that, like, people that I know that are active on today's TL were part of it, and I saw it live, and I deactivated at the time because I was like, you guys are cruel.
Oh, yes.
So it's like, now, you know, we're getting better at understanding what it means to be decent online and offline. And there is also a great group of people who believe that some of these people are crazy, and I agree. And the person will say, well, I'm not a homophobe, so I don't agree with the people on the right who are saying stuff like, yes, the people on the left are all fake tolerant and da 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 da. No. I'm not a homophobe, but I'm also not going to be shouting down people and labeling them labels because of like dissent or because they said the wrong thing. And I'm not going to like weaponize anger and like this malicious vindictiveness for the sake of like carrying the cross of my ideology. There's a lot of people who are actually like that, and I think that there was a lot of alarm, and even the reason why Chimamanda's blog post pulled so much traction and really seized the TL was because a lot of people have become attuned to sort of like this space of like social justice, this space of like being better, more equitable, empathetic humans. So I think that I feel like it will get better simply because there's more people who actually are moderate and who actually are willing to listen and learn and who actually just prefer to choose peace over chaos than there are those who want to be combative. That's just my feeling about it.
Yeah, that could be true. I mean, like you said, I think there might be more moderates online, but I also think that the whole thing with like cancel culture, I think people are getting like they see this becoming a bit more extreme where, okay, maybe in the past, maybe 5-6 years ago, I had an opinion about this, and now in this 2021, you want to pull what I said back then and bring it up forward and say, this is what you said, da da da, you're being this or you're being that. But then you don't know the fact that maybe that personality or that past me has changed or evolved. And I think people are getting tired of, you know, people being dragged for things they said 10 years ago compared to what they are now, because everybody evolves. I mean, I think even I have evolved on some certain things that maybe back in the past I didn't agree with, because, you know, it's just evolution. That's how humans are. Things change, or your beliefs change, or your opinions change because of new evidence that comes into play, or because you run into people who gave you new perspective. So I think people are getting tired of that thing of, you know, people can actually change, and it's not fair to try to drag them for a thing they said 10 years ago. You know, I think it's different if they said it maybe 2 years, 3 years ago, and they're still doing it now to maybe that change now. I don't know, I think I saw somebody just gave me like a quick version of this. They said that, oh yeah, there was somebody on a timeline, you know, back some years ago, they were calling people fat or whatever. And now they're calling them out and saying that, oh yeah, now this person was calling somebody fat, they married a fat person, now they themselves are fat. And it was like, wow. And the funny thing is, the person that the person was referring to actually re-quoted the tweet and said, hey, like she tagged her husband and said, hey, they're talking about us, and she just said lol, because it was funny, because sometimes some things aren't that serious. Sometimes you can play around with somebody's things because they're not that serious. And like I said, some people change. And this person who apparently is now married to this person who is like him now, a bit overweight or whatever, you know, it's fine. It's not crazy that people can change over time. So this thing of trying to drag people over past issues or whatever, maybe you should have a discussion with them about their opinions that may have changed over time instead of trying to drag them.
And I mean, I think it's also just about like, if you even think about impact, right? Because, so I remember my first year of college, one of the things that we had to examine, I was in a college program, and we were sort of discussing protest. And at the time, something had happened in Yale University where I think, if I remember correctly, one of the residence hall directors, so Yale has residential colleges and they have faculty that lives within them. So one of the faculty sent an email, basically, I mean, I don't agree with her, but basically critiquing this idea of people not being able to wear whatever Halloween costumes they would like. this was around, it was at, I think, the day before Halloween or something like that. And so she was basically just saying, you know how people, like white people, sometimes dress up as like Native Americans, or like, you know, there's some blackface, you know, something like that going on. So I guess she was probably fed up with what she considered censorship. And so sent an email that, you know, I don't think it was strongly worded. I thought it was problematic, and ultimately I didn't agree with her. But what followed was like so much protest, so much outcry, you know, people sort of standing outside her house and like shouting it down, calling for her to be removed, like, you know, fired, that she didn't deserve, like she wasn't qualified to like stay among students.
I remember this case.
And what I found funniest of all, I'm sorry, like I don't mean to mock anyone's pain, but I thought it was so funny that some people were saying that their mental health has been severely affected by this incident, and they can't go to class and this and that. And I'm thinking, like, what is the real material impact of this thing that this person said, aside from the fact that it made you, even if you want, it made you extremely angry? What is the real impact of this thing that this person said, right? Like, I don't understand wanting to be cuddled or feeling like everything everyone must say all the time must make you feel good. Otherwise, it has caused so much detrimental impact to you. And this is not to say that people can't say things that like incite harm against people or cause like real trauma, because they can, and they often do. But this is sort of to say that like not everything warrants this type of extreme reactionary response that just labels people automatically as, you know, bigots and this phobic and, you know, violent and all of these very, very emotionally charged ways of speaking. Because then it's like you lose out on the opportunity to even speak to one another. And so back to what I was even saying about, you know, having open debates and writing open letters and challenging and really talking and critiquing and refining our ideas against like this current model where it's just like, oh, fuck this person, sorry for my language, because they said this, and like, yeah, fuck her for life. Like, this person is officially an enemy of the state and she has committed treason. Like, I think maybe also the form of social media is what has like really facilitated this, really what I think is just really bad way of behaving and communicating, because it's just easier to respond in tweets and it's easier to like react and like gang up on people and organize in that way. And I guess it probably feels good too. I'm sure the dopamine hits is amazing. But I think that there are very constructive and wholesome ways to engage with each other. And I'm also guilty of these things and I'm still learning. But I think that there's always a better way of doing things. So ultimately, like, why I said we need reflection is that we need to really look inward and see, like, is this the best way of achieving our goals? And what are those goals in the first place? And sort of, like, reorient and, like, realign ourselves with that purpose, you know?
Yeah, well, I wonder, because nowadays I don't think people take time to even reflect. It's like someone says something and now you have to react. So there's never this, okay, let me reflect on this for a day and I'll come back the next day and give my opinion. Now you have to like immediately react. Same thing will happen to the Chimamanda piece. People just immediately reacted. They didn't wait to see, okay, let me stew on this for maybe like 24 hours and then I'll give my opinion. People were like quick to just give our criticism, dissect it in that 15 minutes or whatever when it came out. I mean, yeah, we're moving too fast. We don't reflect, we don't analyze better. We just want to give that quick, as you said, we want to get that dopamine hit really quick and put out tweets or whatever and just say something. And now, I like I said, I don't know how. I mean, you are more optimistic than I am. I mean, I'm a little bit optimistic about, you know, people having more nuance in the future. But unfortunately, like, the mob is taking over to the point where you find it hard to even find these nuanced thoughts or well made out, you know, counterpoints.
And I think all of this is also just people being scared, right? People being scared to sort of say these nuanced, to make these nuanced takes, you know, because they're afraid of how it will be interpreted, mm-hmm. And the sort of backlash that will come. You know, like someone like me, I have a burner account, so that's really where I go to free my mind and say what I want to say. But like, it's like the fact that you cannot even be your authentic self because you're so afraid, and the fact that this is so pervasive, and the fact that so many people feel this way, I think is something worth investigating. And people, the new thing that I've been seeing, and I don't know if this is meant to be a like a sufficient counter defense, but is that, oh, there's actually nothing wrong with having to think before you tweet. And yes, like there's nothing wrong with having to do that, because knowing that the things you say could potentially hurt someone, mm-hmm. it's a good thing. Yeah. But I don't think the issue is thinking before you tweet, because a lot of us, like, you know, growing up, they told you think before you speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Twitter sometimes is a direct stream of consciousness.
Yeah,
if you're like me, you have very bad attention span issues, you know, you could just be going off. But there's a way that you are thinking before you fire off your tweets, especially to check for grammar or whatever. Yeah. You are thinking what you're saying before you say it. But the fact that you're thinking, and what you're thinking is telling you that someone is going to attack me for this. You're not thinking and saying, I may hurt somebody for this. Yeah. You're thinking and saying, someone is going to attack me for this. And you may say that, okay, you should be able to question why you would be attacked for it, right? But I think even the basis of that fear is not someone is going to attack me because I've harmed someone. They're going to attack me because they will assume bad intent for me. Mm-hmm. And they will assume that I'm looking to harm someone. And they will assume that there is more impact of my statements, and my statement is capable of inflicting more harm than it actually is able to. Are you following like what I'm saying? I don't know if it's making sense, but it's really deeper than just having to think before you say something. It's having to think through what another person may wrongfully sort of give you the responsibility of having to defend, right? And most people just would rather avoid that type of conflict. And that's a real problem, because you're censoring people. And even John Stuart Mill always says, like, even though he is another problematic person, but he was talking sort of about the power in dissent and the power in, like, people saying, you know, people having free speech to be able to say things, like to be able to express dissenting views, is because the truth is refined by being tested. Whatever the objective truth you say exists, it can only be that if you have tested it against the false and found it to emerge true. So you cannot, like, you know, enforce your, like, absolute dogma on people and expect them to just chew it and regurgitate it the way that everyone in your group has, especially when you're talking to people that are different layers than you. So if you now, like, refuse to even challenge your truth and have it refined, how do you expect everyone to sort of rally around you and for your cause? Do you understand? Especially when they see the way you treat people who have not fully bought onto what you're saying and have openly challenged it. Do you understand where I'm coming from? Like, it's very dicey, and you're dealing with human beings at each step of the way. People have feelings. Like, you cannot, like, label someone certain labels and say certain things to them and expect for them to just, like, sit down and take it.
It's I don't know, we're in an interesting age nowadays. I don't know where we're gonna go from here. I always say that I just kind of wish that, you know, every week at least everybody just like basically Twitter should just crash one day out of the seven days, so that at least we can just say, okay, everybody breathe and come back later. But it's not gonna happen, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, yeah, because you were saying something, that this thing about, you know, kind of safe spaces and thing. And yes, the thing is, you will get uncomfortable. I mean, there's somebody's going on the internet is going to say something that you're going to vehemently disagree with. That is going to happen one way or the other. The question is, are you going to look at that opinion and then say, okay, what are they exactly saying that I disagree with? Like, basically, do you have to like look at your own opinion and see, okay, maybe I might be wrong, or maybe I can see what they're saying, but I can still disagree with them and still, you know, keep living my life. Because yeah, there's a lot of opinions out there, a lot of thoughts out there that people won't agree with. And you have to just, you know, not always try to follow up an attack. You're just like, okay, let's read this situation and say, I disagree with this person and I disagree with what they're saying, but I can see where they're coming from and just keep it moving.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I think at some point, I don't know how sustainable this social media thing is about, you know, freeing your thoughts and saying stuff online. Because I don't know, I just feel like we're all going to just be in our groups. The moderates are going to be in the middle. The people in black and white who have black and white opinions are going to be on one side. And we're just going to keep in our corners and just do what we want to do. I mean, like, I have a whole, like, you know, thought on this new age of feminism and how it's echoing across the internet with different factions of feminists, you know, forming from social media. But that's a whole other topic. Yeah, that's a whole other debate. And like, it's so funny to see it happening. And I'm like, wow, what's happening? Now there's this fractured group within a fractured group within a fractured group, and they all don't want to talk to each other. It's I don't know, it's interesting. I think, yeah, it's social media is creating this kind of interesting group, fractured groups and these factions, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where we'll go from here.
Neither do I. I think it would be interesting to watch everything unfold.
Yeah. I think everybody should just have a debate. Oxford style, we all go watch and just say, oh, that was a good debate. I disagree, but okay, I can see where they're coming from, and just keep it moving.
Shut the hell up. That's what I think. I think everyone should just like be quiet.
We can be quiet. I agree. Let's all be quiet. Maybe Twitter is not the best idea to have everybody just have a freedom of conscience.
Come online and crack jokes. Like,
yeah, I mean, Twitter back in the day was about just cracking jokes. When I think about it, we all just used to mock each other and make fun of everything under the sun. Now it's become very serious, to the point where you have to censor yourself because a joke that you think is funny might be offensive, so you keep it to yourself or just keep it within your chat groups and stuff. So yeah, we all kind of have to censor ourselves these days, unfortunately or fortunately.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, well,
exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens in the coming days. I mean, it's funny because I know for certain that this Chimamanda topic is going to die down, and there's a whole new topic that's going to crop up on some other side and just take over the whole timeline, and we'll be right back to fighting over that specific topic. So yeah, I mean, it's a revolving door. We're all gonna have debates about sensitive topics every now and then.
Yeah, I definitely think that, at least for me, my hope, like I said, that like to come out from this is just that I hope that within the community there are people who are willing to sort of lend their voice to truth and reconciliation and like healing and an active like audit. I know that this is very like high level wishful thinking, but for me, that's really what I pray the outcome is, because like, you can't see your own blind spots, and you can't be right about something all the time. And so I think that having that space to talk and interrogate and sit with who you have become, and like what, you know, your group or whatever has become, and being able to be honest and real with yourself is really where the work starts. And I saw what I think is a brilliant tweet by Eloho of First Check Africa. And it's funny that I saw that tweet, because Eloho actually tweeted something that really annoyed me a few months ago about Harry and Meghan. And she was sort of like aligning with Piers Morgan and co about Meghan Markle, you know, why is she talking to the press? Why is she comparing herself to Diana? She said some things that really, really shocked me, and I really looked up to her. And so I was very disappointed. And so I just unfollowed her, but it wasn't sort of like she's canceled. And I think a couple of days later, you know, she deleted the tweets, and she spoke a little bit about like how she was wrong. And I was like, okay, like that's really mature. And just sort of left it at that. So Eloho said that the journey to being successful human starts the day we are truly self-reflective and unemotional about our actions and qualities. It's easy to castigate others. We feel strong. It's hard to hear ourselves reflected back by others. We feel weak, but that's where the work is. And I think that that just sums up exactly how I feel about this situation, is that, you know, it takes a lot of humility and humanity to be able to sit with that weakness and to be able to realize that this is how other people are viewing me. And communication is not just about what you say, it's also about how the other person is receiving it and how they're taking it. So if someone genuinely believes that you have communicated harm to them, you need to sit with that and wrestle with that with them, and think about like the type of person you are, the type of values that you want. And so for me, that's how I feel that like it really, the work and what would bring the best outcome is if all parties involved are really willing to do the work of how they are coming off to other people and investigate that and like wrestle with how difficult that is and come to some sort of like understanding of what the best way to move forward is, rather than just like running around, you know, bickering, kicking and screaming. That's just how I feel.
Yeah, man. I wonder if we'll ever get back to that, because on the current trajectory, I don't know. I really don't know. But we shall see. You know, humans can surprise you. So let's hope for the best.
Yeah. Always hoping.
Yeah. But this has been an interesting discussion. I mean, I think we
covered. Really, do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to uncover.
I'm scared. Like how I don't totally disagree with J.K. Rowling.
I mean, oh God, you see, and even with the J.K. Rowling, you can disagree with her, but then to just say let's cancel her and stuff, it doesn't promote discussion of what was said. Way I see it, like if somebody says something, okay, let's sit down and discuss what they actually said and what.
Yeah, let's unpack this.
Yeah, let's unpack it and not just say cancel that person, deplatform, cancel all her
exactly.
movies.
And you see that even come from like I'm saying, just this assumption that like just by saying certain things, you are automatically causing harm. Like the conversation itself is harmful. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. We need to do more unpacking and just discussions and not just jump to conclusions and extrapolate something that might not be there. I mean, like I said, offline debates, Oxford style, let's vote on it and move on.
Or podcast style. Ooh,
or podcast style. Oh yeah, podcast style. Yeah, you know, just unpack everything in a podcast and just, you know, have disagreements, but still at the end of the day, we both have our points and the audience can listen and learn new things. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. But yeah, this has been a great conversation. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a lot more we can unpack, but then we'll talk for hours.
Yeah, we would.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm going to let you go. This has been very, very fruitful. I hope people who are listening, you know, got some points or learned something new today, at least. Even if they disagree with what we both said, they can have, we can, they don't call us out on Twitter and try to cancel us and just, you know, have a civil disagreement. We'll see. We'll see. But yeah, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate your time. Really do. Always nice to have your point of view on some of these issues.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. You take care.
You too.
So that was our episode on social media. Yeah, it's an interesting topic about social media. You know, there's a lot of discussions, a lot of new points to make about the ever-evolving nature of social media culture, how we behave online, and what's the future looking like. I mean, are we going to have more civil like debates, or basically have we just cornered ourselves into different factions and groups, and will it ever get better? Who knows? Hopefully it does get better, but I have my doubts, but you know, anything can happen. So yeah, so thanks a lot for listening to this episode. Hopefully we will be recording more episodes in the future. So thanks a lot for listening and take care.